Welcome everybody to another edition of the Thunder Buddies podcast. I'm Eric Horn. I am in the media center of the American Airlines Center in Dallas after the Thunder's 111 to 110 win over the Dallas Mavericks. On the other line is Brett Dawson from Oklahoma City. Brett?
This is like deja vu, Eric. I feel like we've already done this before.
Yeah, I did this like 5 minutes ago because the batteries died and I had to go rummaging through Dallas's many drawers and nooks and crannies to find some batteries. I won't reveal where I got these batteries from, but thank you. Thank you, American Airlines Center. Thank you, Dallas Mavericks. You've had a tough couple of weeks, and I'm not going to go into much more detail about that, but you guys have treated me with great hospitality. You treated the Thunder with great hospitality tonight by, I wouldn't say letting them win by 1 point, because you did all you could to ensure that they would have a tough time. And the Thunder, frankly, probably should have lost this game with the way that they played in the second half. But they have better players than the Mavericks. And these players are under the impression that everything is fine, when Brett, actually, it's probably the farthest from the truth. Everything is not fine in Thunderland. They're just winning games against bad teams.
Yeah, which I guess is, it's one thing to, they won the game against the bad team, and sometimes they lose those games. So that is, I think, a positive, maybe, but there aren't many positives to take away from this. This was a, I know after the game, look, I was watching Billy Donovan talk about point differentials, and like the little roll eye emoji was what my face looked like. Because look, he's right about the Dallas Mavericks. They lose their games by an average of about 2.6 points a game. But I just did a little bit. I looked at some numbers. Okay. So, because it was kind of like it was a little bit of a fact check on Billy Donovan talking about how the Mavericks only lose their games by an average of 2 point. I think he said 2.7 and went down to 2.6 tonight. That is true. But, they beat Toronto. They beat the Raptors. That's a very good team. They beat the Raptors by five. If you take the other top teams in the league, so I'm just saying the top three teams on each side of the Eastern Western Conference, they're in total, they're 1-13. That one win is against Toronto, 0-13 against all the other teams, and they lose those games by an average of 11 points. So good teams beat the Mavericks. I mean, they just do. They've had a couple of close games against some of those teams. They've beaten Toronto. They've played close against Golden State once. But they lose to good teams, and they lose pretty comfortably to good teams, because they lose by, if you lose by six or seven in the NBA, that's a fairly comfortable win. That's the way, the nature of the league. It's close. The games are close. Good teams have beaten them. The Thunder has really struggled with them and has beaten them close now.
Yeah, and they have two blowout losses to the Mavericks this year, which is just frankly inexcusable. It's inexcusable for the Thunder to win this game the way they did, considering how they started this game. And that, to me, is one of the most frustrating things about the Thunder this entire season, is that, you know, we saw it in the game in Sacramento, how great of a start they got off to. And I think that it's part of the team's culture, and I think it's part of the team's attitude, that they're expected to win. The stars in particular talk with rhetoric that just is littered with, okay, we're expected to do this. We've done this before. But yeah, that was before. This is when you were different players. This was when you had more athleticism. This is when you were, you know, individual players that could go about the game in a certain way and didn't have to conform and didn't have to do certain things to fit other guys within to the frame of a team.
Yeah, and in a couple of cases, it's when you were in the Eastern Conference.
Yes, Paul George and Carmelo Anthony. And in a couple of cases, yeah, and in a couple of cases, it was when you were playing with Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook, where I've seen these games where you go into a shooting funk and Kevin Durant says, okay, I'm going to score 12 points in a row, and I'm going to get us out of this craziness that we're dealing with. Look, last year was great. Russell Westbrook had an incredible year of bailing this team, or the team that he was with, out of game after game. But he also had situations where he put them into said scenario because he didn't manage the game the way he should have, and he shot wildly. And, you know, it's a situation tonight where it was kind of the same thing. Russell Westbrook goes 0 of 8 in the second half. Suddenly the offense just goes into a funk after the second quarter, after the first quarter, where they were really good. And basically this team played with urgency for like a quarter, the overtime, and the last 3 minutes of the fourth quarter. That's it.
Yeah.
That's the only time the team played with urgency. The entire second and third quarters, you probably say the team didn't play with any urgency because the Mavericks played them even in the second quarter, and the Mavericks outscored them by 10 in the third quarter.
That's what teams do. They outscore the Thunder by 10 in the third quarter. Let's talk about that third quarter play because we were going to talk about that earlier before the batteries died. I tweeted out the video, and you wrote about it as the lead of your story.
This was by the way, not even seeing your – I didn't even see your video. I just said, no. I gotta write about this nonsense. Because I didn't even see what happened on the turnover. I saw that they scored. I put my head down. And then next thing I knew, Wesley Matthews was dribbling to the corner and shooting a three.
When you cover a game, you miss like 90% of turnovers off inbound passes.
Yeah.
You just do because you look at a stat, you look at something, and, you know, because you're not expecting a turnover on an inbound pass.
Yeah. Anyway, the play was incredible from a Mavericks and Thunder standpoint. It was just incredible effort on both ends.
So the inbound comes to Westbrook. Matthews steals it and just sort of dribbles it out to the three-point line in the corner. And Westbrook just sort of at first doesn't look like he's going to move at all, and then just sort of nonchalantly heads in Wes Matthews' direction much, much too late and much too soft to close out. And he drills a three, and they score 5 points in about 4 seconds.
Yeah, and the game basically changes in the first couple of seconds of the third quarter. It was like the Thunder just didn't bother to even come out for the third quarter. I think Josh Huestis hit a three at that point. But other than that, it was just really flat to start the third quarter, which we've seen the Thunder do before. And they turned the ball over too much in that quarter. They turned the ball over 7 times in the third quarter to the Mavericks, too. Next thing you know, the Mavericks are yet again in a game against the Thunder. We've seen it too many times this season. We've heard the excuses too many times before this season. Yet at the end of the night, the Thunder still has a win. And that's the bad part about this Thunder team is that they're good enough to win these games.
Yeah.
So they're not learning any lessons. Because like you thought they would have learned lessons from the 8-12 start to the season. Yeah. And then they got right. And then they got really right with Robertson, the 8-game winning streak. And you saw the team really meshing and gelling, and they were playing with pace and urgency, similar to the way that they were playing tonight in the first quarter. I took a note, I said, this looks like the 8-game winning streak Thunder in the first quarter. They were getting up the court quickly. Billy Donovan was saying, pace. You know, and Russell Westbrook was getting the ball, and he was getting into the action of the offense early in the shot clock. He was getting downhill. As soon as they got rebounds or as soon as they got a steal, it was immediately go and touch pass. 3 guys touched the ball. 4 guys touched the ball. Jumping in transition.
Beautiful play where he sort of threw ahead to Paul George. It wasn't a great pass, and Paul had to sort of corral it, but he flipped it back to Carmelo Anthony for a three.
Yeah.
That went in. Carmelo did not make a lot of shots, but he made that one.
That was about the only shot Melo made. I think that's the only shot he made in the first half, honestly. I think he got going again in the second half, maybe the third quarter for a little while. But Melo
made a big shot in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
When he got posted up with Dennis Smith Jr., but that matchup did not go Carmelo's way on the other end of the floor very often.
No, Dennis Smith roasted him in overtime. But or was it the fourth quarter? I can't even remember at this point. It's really late. But look. Going back to what I was saying about this team, you think they learn, but they don't. And we talked about this so many times on the podcast, the concept of habits. And they don't have good habits against bad teams. And I don't think it's just as simple to assume that, once you get to the playoffs and you're playing nothing but good teams – you're going to just have good habits all the time. Because guess what? All of the teams that are in front of them in the Western Conference right now, besides Golden State and Houston, they haven't really played well against consistently enough. You know, New Orleans has beaten them twice.
Yeah.
Portland, they can't beat. Denver is a team that they've struggled with this season. Minnesota is a team that they've struggled with. I mean, which is a series that could have swung either way because of the Andrew Wiggins buzzer beater, but Minnesota's got a 3-1 advantage of them on them in that season series.
Right.
So, you know, San Antonio, they still have two games to play against, but do you trust the Thunder against San Antonio in two games down the stretch when two teams are fighting for playoff position? I mean, you could say that the Thunder has played well against these teams, and we'll get to that because Russell Westbrook was just adamant about that tonight when asked about
it. Yeah, I did a little fact-checking on that one, too. We'll talk about that in a second.
Their record against It's gotten worse in the past 2 weeks, I can tell you that, with the Golden State loss.
He said, so somebody asked him, I think it was Steve McGee, he asked him.
It was,
you know,
it was Tim McMahon, actually.
Oh, okay, okay. Asked him about, you know, is there any concern about the way they're playing against these lower-level teams? And he said, what's our record against the best teams in the league?
Which has nothing to do with the Mavericks tonight, by the
absolutely
way.
Absolutely not.
It has nothing to do with the Mavericks.
And he says, you know, I don't know that off the top of my head, so I can tell you it's something like 7-2. Or 7-1, it's really not something like that. So it depends on what you consider to be the best teams in the league, and that would be, I don't want to put words in Russell Westbrook's mouth. So once again, like I did with the Mavericks, let's look at the top three teams in each conference, right? The best three teams in the East, the best three teams in the West. I think we could concede those are the six best teams in the NBA. They're 6-6 against those teams. Now, if you don't want to consider Minnesota, especially right now because Jimmy Butler's out, if you don't want to consider Minnesota one of those best teams, you just want to take the top five teams in the NBA, they're 5-3. So, I mean, you know, it's fine. It's a good record, but it's not like you can't – it's not good enough that you hang everything on that and say, well, it doesn't matter that we never come out to play hard against – well, I shouldn't say come out. We don't sustain our effort level against Sacramento and Dallas because of what we did against these teams. Well, you're 5-3 against those teams. It's not that great.
Yeah, and guess what's going to happen? Let's say hypothetically Golden State and the Thunder get matched up in the first round, which is a distinct possibility because right now they are the 2 and the 7. You're not beating Golden State by 15, 20 points in a playoff series. I'll tell you that right now. There aren't going to be blowouts in a playoff series against Golden State. And the Thunder got two blowouts against Golden State, played great in both of those games. And that's just not something that you can take as an indication that you'll be fine just because you scored some blowout victories against some teams, against a team that's played 100 games for 4 straight years and has been getting everybody's best shot, which Russell Westbrook also referenced tonight. We get everybody's best shot. Well, you know what? Golden State's been getting everybody's best shot for 4 years, they're bound to have some bad games against you, and we saw what they're fully capable of in the last game against the Thunder. So I don't think any rational NBA follower thinks that the Thunder is going to go into a series with Golden State and just quote unquote be fine when they're playing the way that they are against these rum dum teams and just turning it on for the good teams.
Yeah, you know, and the other thing is, too, like, and this is a little bit petty to be pointing out, but it has to do – it's because they draw attention to that record against those teams and because they haven't done enough to really deserve, you know, a level of confidence in them. It's fair to point out, I think, a lot of those wins that they have against the best teams, they got a little asterisk by them. You know, the Golden State wins are legit. They beat Golden State twice, particularly the one where they beat Golden State in Oakland. That's a really, really impressive win. But Chris Paul didn't play in the Rockets game, the one game they've played against the Rockets so far. They still got a couple more left against those guys. They look great against Toronto. It's as good as they've looked all year against anybody. But Toronto's on the second night of a back-to-back. They had actually lost in Dallas the night before. That's Dallas's one really good win. You know, so that's the second night of a back-to-back.
Was Isaiah Thomas Cleveland.
Right. It was Cleveland that had changed. And then the time they played the Cleveland before they changed and the time they played Cleveland with this revamped roster, they lost. So, you know, they don't, it's not like they've beaten these teams at full strength. And look, there are situations where they're not at full strength and they've had to play, like they played Minnesota twice on the second night of a back to back. I get that this cuts both ways. But what I'm saying is, you know, again, that record is a little inflated, just a little inflated, and it's not as good as Westbrook says it is. And so that is not, to me, they haven't done enough against those teams to just dismiss the way that, that they've played against these other teams. Because if they were beating up on these other teams, you wouldn't care that some of those big wins are a little bit, you know, not, I don't want to say tainted, that's not the right word, but they had some advantages in those games. Who cares? If you're beating up on the teams you're supposed to beat up on, you'd have a really battened up record right now, and you'd be comfortably the three.
Yeah, yeah. It's what makes the way that these guys carry themselves so, I guess, maddening. And part of you can justify it because they have to stay confident. They can't say that they're disappointed right. in their season, or say that their season's a failure because, you know, they're in the middle of a playoff race, and Russell Westbrook can't ever show weakness when he's the guy, he's the pulse of the team. But at the same time, you would think that through their play, they would show or start to get serious about a level of consistency. It's 60 some odd games in, and Billy Donovan and some of these guys don't have answers for why they're inconsistent.
This is what they are. They're an inconsistent team that's not going to play great against teams like this, because this is too late in the season to think, like, there's only, what, 19 games left? They're not going to turn that around. They're not going to suddenly be this team that comes out and is just kind of a buzzsaw every night.
Yeah. Yeah, it's weird, man. And then at the end of the day, they won 3 of 4. And their only loss is to Golden State.
Yeah. Like, right. It's very true. I mean, and look, the other thing I do want to say, Dallas is not good, despite the point differential crap. It's not a good team, but it's a bad matchup for the Thunder because they play small and they are great at exploiting mismatches, and they have them in a lot of places on the floor, and they do a really good job. Man, they find them. It is so drilled into those Mavericks guys to find that mismatch, and they do a great job with it. That is one thing that's like, it's a real legit X's and O's reason why they give the Thunder trouble.
Yeah, and Carmelo Anthony stinks at defense, and Dwight Powell and Nerlens Noel are really athletic. You know,
yep.
Going away from Dirk at the end of the game, or even pockets of the in the middle of the game, that's a guy swallowing his pride, and I think that says a lot. Look, obviously the Mavericks aren't a good team, and a part of that is the reason, because one of their best players is 40 years old. Like,
right.
That's part of the reason why the Mavericks aren't a good team, because Dirk is a guy that should probably be coming off the bench playing limited minutes. But in the situation they're in against these teams, you can sit Dirk down in a way that Billy Donovan, I think, is fearful of sitting Carmelo Anthony down in these. Like, I think I can recall one game this season where it was a tight game where Billy Donovan did not go to Carmelo Anthony in the fourth quarter. And
yeah.
I can't recall the game off the top of my head. I think it was in that first cluster of 20 games where they went 8-12 and he might have sat Carmelo.
Yeah.
But
I remember the game because I remember it being a talking point. And it was just basically like a rotational – I forget what exactly the reasoning behind it, but he just sort of said, well, we had played him in these minutes, and it wasn't like I didn't think he was playing well or blah, blah, blah.
And look, I think that part of it is you want Carmelo out there in terms of his offense. You know, he got that key bucket over Dennis Smith tonight. He got a mismatch. But that was only a product of the Thunder getting 3 offensive rebounds. I mean, how many times is that going to happen? How many times is the Thunder going to be able to get 3 offensive rebounds to put a game overtime?
Maybe lots, the way Steven Adams is playing, but yes, you can't count on that.
Yeah. So, look, it's not an every game thing, obviously. It's not a thing where you have to say Carmelo can't play in fourth quarters anymore, but can he swallow his pride in order to make this team better? I think he has in certain junctures of this season, but I also think he's kind of talk the talk in terms of saying I know my role and I'm comfortable in my role. Can he be comfortable with you saying, okay, against the Dallas Mavericks in February, we are going to sit you for a significant amount of time and play these other guys because you can't get off the floor and your second jump doesn't exist against Nerlens Noel? Like, is that is that possible? Is that a thing that's even possible with this team? And because we're asking that question, I think is a microcosm of this season and some of the arrogance that kind of that permeates through this Thunder team.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's something to that. I mean, it comes in the way it comes through in the way that he sort of mocked the idea of coming off the bench, which is not something that I think he even necessarily needs to do. It's just the idea of like the way he sort of turned up his nose at it. And that is an extension. It's the same way that Westbrook says tonight, I'm not worried because look what we've done against the best teams. It's the same way that Paul George says after the Golden State game, you know, I'm not worried about where we are in the playoffs. There's no concern. If we get in, we're going to be fine. Not even if we get in. He said, I don't want to say just get in and we're fine, but that's the bottom line, get in. And like, he didn't talk about the possibility that they might not, which is like a thing these guys don't even seem to consider to be reality, but it's reality that they're as close to falling out as they are to hosting. You know, they're in a pretty good position because they have a pretty good team and everybody's really bunched up. Nobody's running away from them. But at the same time, you know, they're going to go through a stretch coming up very soon where they're going to play 11 straight games against teams with winning records. Now, maybe that's good for them because maybe it gets them to focus every night against those teams. But night in and night out, a stretch like that in the NBA is tough. That's hard. You don't want to have to do that. So there are no guarantees for these guys, and they do sort of behave like there are.
You know what's going to be the best part of this if they don't make the playoffs? Like, the best part will be how little actually happens that's different. Because we all presume, not all of us, but there's probably a faction of fans that are going to want Billy Donovan to get fired if they don't make the playoffs. And I wouldn't necessarily disagree with that if they don't make the playoffs, because I think there's just this general apathy towards putting in the level of focus necessary to win games against bad teams night in and night out. And I'm frankly to the point to where I'm out of like reasons as to why they don't do that. Like it's gotta be something. And
it's also so weird that they have so many nights like tonight where, and you know, Donovan said this after the game, and it's true. They did come out the way that you're supposed to come out in the first quarter. They did look like they were taking the Mavericks seriously. They did look like they were going to run them off the floor. And maybe some of that goes back to the level of arrogance that they have, that once they get a lead, they think the game is over. I don't know. But that's a really weird thing about this team. The way they can come out and play in the first quarter and then not with that same set of guys playing against the other team, same set of guys, not do that with any consistency at all in the third quarter.
Yeah. And to what I was saying, like, I don't think this team's going to be able to fire him if it comes down to it. Because are they going to be able to eat that money when they're already over the tax? They're hoping that they can keep Paul George. Paul George isn't going to stay if you fire Billy Donovan, or maybe he will. Maybe they know something I don't know.
Yeah.
But you would think that if you're trying to keep a guy, continuity would probably be the best thing in terms of keeping a guy around. So you don't want to fire a coach and show kind of this instability when a guy's trying to make a free agency decision.
Well, also, if they miss the playoffs, it might not matter. Who knows? I mean, if you're Paul George and this team doesn't make the playoffs, you know, what's the difference between this and the Lakers? They're younger and they're in LA. And so if you're staring at two non-playoff teams, maybe you just go live in the city you want to live in.
Yeah, I also think that this season, in the wild set of circumstances, well, I'm not going to say wild set of circumstances, just the way it started and the way that this team has played with just a level of arrogance that is beyond anything that I could ever imagine, you'd like to think that a rational Paul George would say, okay, we're not going to miss the playoffs again. We'll come back.
Right.
We'll come back hungry, and we'll win this thing, and we'll retool, and maybe I can nudge Carmelo into leaving, which frankly wouldn't make any difference. It would just get him under the tax.
They
still wouldn't be able to go get a guy, which is a problem too. But
and by the way, I mean, like, to be clear, there is no indication these guys don't really like each other. They seem to really genuinely enjoy each other.
Yeah, yeah, we're just being silly when I say stuff like that. Like,
I mean, like, it's not like, I don't think it's that. I don't think it's their, I don't think that's their problem. I don't think it has anything to do with how much they like each other.
Yeah, and I don't think that the relationships are going to have anything to do with Paul George leaving. I don't think he's
he's
going to leave because he doesn't like Russell Westbrook or he doesn't like Carmelo Anthony or Steve.
Yeah,
Adams.
I think it's quite the opposite. I think he really likes all of those guys.
Yeah, and
at least it comes across that way. He is a hard guy to read because he's like relentlessly positive about everything.
Yeah,
and so it just it seems like he likes everybody, but and it does really seem like he likes those guys.
And I do think he's telling the truth when he says that Russell Westbrook makes his decision harder, and not even necessarily because of the things that like Russell Westbrook says, but because Russell Westbrook is extremely intimidating. Is Paul George going to be able to do what Kevin Durant didn't do and be able to tell Russell Westbrook I'm leaving? Like, is he going to be able to do that? Because that's going to be the second time that a guy, a superstar, has had to bail on Russell Westbrook, essentially.
And yeah.
I think Paul George is a guy who likes people to like him. So I think that's going to be really difficult for him to do when the time comes. And look, if Russell Westbrook can somehow convince Paul George to stay, then great. I hope Paul George stays for the right reasons and not just because he's scared of Russell Westbrook. That's no reason to stay anywhere. You shouldn't stick around just because you're afraid some guy's going to, you know, hate you or give you a DDT in the street if he sees you or something like that.
By the way, speaking of like guys and moving and retooling rosters and all that stuff, there's a great moment captured on the Fox Sports broadcast tonight. And I'm not a professional lip reader, but they caught just sort of an end game interaction between Russell Westbrook and Doug McDermott. They were kind of laughing and seemed to be enjoying each other's company quite a lot. I think Doug got along pretty well with Westbrook when he was here. And as they're parting company, Westbrook has a big smile on his face. And I'm like 95% sure what he said was he kind of looked over and said, "We need you back."
Wow.
Which is kind of funny. I mean, it was like kind of a funny thing. I think he was just kind of making a joke about how they had played or something along those lines. Because he's very upbeat. He's very happy. As he said it, it was kind of a joking kind of thing. But it was very funny just to see that. That's, I'm pretty sure that's what he said.
Yeah, they need his defense.
Yeah.
Those possessions tonight where Alex Abrines and Doug McDermott were matched up against each other, just thought that basically the world was going to implode when that happened.
McBuckets could have ended the game. He could have put them ahead to a degree that I don't think the Thunder could have come back. He missed two open threes that if he makes both those threes, I think Dallas goes on and wins the game.
Yeah, he's still got some of that Thunder stink on him, I guess.
Yeah.
Old McBuckets. He's never gonna get paid.
Poor guy.
We were like, I love McBuckets. We were like, Doug McDermott's gonna get paid when he goes to the Knicks. Good for him. No.
Yeah.
No.
I know. And then he was like, oh, he's gonna go to Dallas and like that's gonna work well. They run really good stuff and like he's fine. He's fine.
Yeah. He's just a guy. He's just a dude missing shots. Same way Alex Abrines is missing a shot. I'm looking at it in the background right now. I'm looking. I think Steven Adams just committed an offensive foul or something. No, it was Patrick.
There were a lot
Patrick
of those.
Patterson. It was Patrick.
A lot
Patterson.
Of offensive fouls tonight. Tonight was like a. If somebody told me that was the most offensive fouls in a Thunder game this season, I would buy it.
Yeah, it was a. They were sloppy, man. I mean, aside from the first quarter, they were pretty sloppy.
Look great in the first quarter. Once again, look great in the first quarter.
But hey, they get a clutch time win for this, if that matters any. I haven't checked their clutchery as of late.
I actually just thought about that during the game tonight because I was thinking about that. I was thinking about tonight will be a clutch. There'll be like clutch time numbers, and there'll be a last 2 minute nothing like controversial that I can remember in the game. But I was just thinking about those two things that I hadn't had to think about those things in a little while.
Yeah. Well, I'd say this has gone on long enough. I have to
You want to talk about Corey Brewer quickly?
Yeah, we might as well talk about Mr. Brewer. Okay. This is my issue with Corey Brewer. And this has probably been my issue with any guy that the Thunder picked up in the buyout market. We've probably talked about this. How much of a difference is Corey Brewer going to make? Is he actually going to play? I say he is going to make minimal difference if the Thunder plays with the same kind of just laissez-faire attitude they do mm-hmm. from game to game. Because what are you going to get out of Corey Brewer if the rest of the guys are just like, meh, you know, it'll be okay, Corey, right? Yeah, just Corey, come on down, man. Just come do this Thunder thing we do where we don't play with a lot of urgency for, you know, three quarters or so.
Yeah, he doesn't strike me, and like, people can correct me if I'm wrong. He doesn't strike me as a guy who's going to energize everything by showing up, you know, like, and I don't think there were a lot of guys who were going to be like this. Now, maybe, you know, he probably gets along great with Billy Donovan. And we, by the way, we're talking about Corey Brewer, who we assume is going to sign with the Thunder on Friday. It's not 100%, but that's the way things are trending. Yeah, based on reporting, Adrian Wojnarowski reported it that he has been bought out now by the Lakers, and the assumption is that he's going and Woj's report is that he's going to sign with them.
There's a couple things. I mean, he could have seen the Mavericks game tonight and said, oh, yeah, I could play for these suckers. Or he could have seen the Mavericks game tonight and been like, oh, I don't want to play with these suckers. Like,
yeah, right.
He could have a change of heart and be like, yeah, I'm going to Philly. Because everybody just seems to be going to Philly.
Yeah, exactly. Here's the one thing about him, and I thought about this tonight, and this is – so here's just something ridiculous and stupid, but I'm going to say it anyway. It's not out of the realm of possibility, I think, that they could start him. I know that sounds insane, but I think it would just make their rotations back the way they used to be. Like, they could just kind of go back a little bit on some of the things. You could just sort of roll him out there at the start, and then that brings Eustace back as your sort of long rangy defender off the bench that they sort of lacked, that they kind of like, they kind of liked him in that role. I don't think that'll happen. I think that's a stretch because that's putting somebody at the two who's not really a two, although Houston's isn't really one either. It wouldn't be crazy, I think, just to kind of realign your rotations that way. But I think mainly he's just going to steal a couple of minutes here and there from some of these guys. Maybe he steals a couple Ferguson minutes. Maybe in the playoffs, you sort of phase out Terrence Ferguson. And you just have another veteran just steal a couple minutes here and there.
Sort of phase out Terrence Ferguson in the playoffs.
Yeah. You phase out Terrence Ferguson in the playoffs. So, like, instead of throwing a rookie out there, you have Corey Brewer to steal those, like, whatever, 4 or 5 minutes. That's the role I assume he's going to be in.
I honestly think that Josh Eustace is better as the starter right now.
Yeah.
And, again, the starting, finishing stuff is mostly – the starting stuff is mostly inconsequential. It's more so about the finishing.
That's why, to me, I think you could roll out a guy who's not that good in the starting lineup and just move one of those other guys who you like into with the bench unit. And I don't think they'll do that. It's just something that crossed my mind tonight as I watched them play and they kind of messed around with those dudes.
Yeah, I was actually talking to Nick Gallo about this, about, you know, him – Corey Brewer potentially being a starter, and I was saying to myself, like, look, this isn't like a Taj Gibson situation where there's a clear difference in okay, we got Taj Gibson, who's a grown-up, he can start and make us better. Like, you don't really know if Corey Brewer has anything. We just assume that Corey Brewer is going to come in here and make a difference, but the dude was shooting 18.6% from three.
I don't assume he's going to make a difference at all. I really don't. He's not a very good player anymore.
No.
My thought is just what they might do with their rotations if they had him. And again, I'm not predicting he's going to start. That's just the thing where I would think, like, oh, well, if they like Eustace in this role, you could probably get away with starting somebody. You can get away with starting almost any of those guys. They play pretty well at the beginning of games regardless.
Yeah. Now, I'd like to see... I'd like to see him, you know, if Billy's going to experiment, which we know he's going to do, I'd like to see him get some run against some of these crummy teams they're going to play, whether it's like an Atlanta on the road or whatever.
Those are getting fewer and further between. It'd be really nice if they could get him in there, get him in on Friday. I don't know that that's very likely.
Yeah, because, you know, he doesn't have that Thunder stink on him in terms of going to Phoenix yet. So maybe some interesting performances. And somebody actually texted me about this tonight that I know in the league. Corey Brewer tends to have pretty solid performances against former teams. I don't know if that counts for anything. Like, he lit up the Rockets when they played him this year, and the Lakers beat the Rockets. He's played well against Minnesota, who he played for. So I wonder if Corey Brewer can be like a secret weapon against the Rockets these last couple of times they played. They play the Rockets next week.
Yeah.
So
Corey Brewer would be like that's like another Raymond Felton. He could have a revenge game like every night. Feels like Corey Brewer's played for like 100 teams.
Corey Brewer's been around the block, man. He's been some places. Anyway, I'm going to get out of here.
That's
our Corey Brewer discussion. The point is, we don't know. We don't know about Corey Brewer. He's a nice buy to have. That's in that wing role, but what his role will be, you'd like for it to be minimum because you would like for some other guys to play well. You'd like for Josh Huestis to play well. You'd like for Alex Abrines to play well.
Or you'd like 2013 Corey Brewer, but that's not what you're getting.
Yeah, that's probably not what you're going to get. And look, Corey Brewer might stand to be a better player with better players.
Yes, he's been on a garbage team. Well, I mean, the Lakers have played better, but they're young and not very good.
But Corey Brewer was also playing the ninth or tenth most minutes on a Lakers team that's not very good, which gives you an indication that, one, the Lakers probably were just going for the quote-unquote we're going to play young talent thing, a.k.a. tanking, and two, Corey Brewer's not good. So he was basically a throw-in in a trade, too. So the Rockets are trying to dump salary.
Yeah.
So,
and this is this is what's out there right now. This is if the Thunder, after the trade deadline, and once that first wave of buyout guys, and once some of those other guys who there was all this kind of on the fence, was Wes Matthews going to get bought out? Was Vince Carter going to get bought out? Once those guys, and once that didn't happen, well, now the guys you're going to get are not going to be. You're not going to get a difference maker now.
A lot of the guys we hadn't an idea were going to get bought out didn't get bought out. The Tyson Chandlers of the world or Kenneth Reed or these guys who could make a real difference who are still rotation players didn't get bought out. So that changed the landscape of the buyout market. And
It made it once Marco Bellinelli was gone, guys there was sort of a first tier of guys and that tier wasn't very big.
Yeah. And now it's the Corey Brewer era. Presumably, the Corey Brewer era is coming to Oklahoma City. So get your popcorn ready. I'm Eric Horn. Brett Dawson's here. I went 37 minutes on the Mavericks and Corey Brewer.
Got it happens.
We will see you after the Phoenix game. We all know strange things happen in Phoenix. And then that will prepare us for even stranger things in Portland on Saturday. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for listening, and we will see you later.